south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, a lot of delinquent emails today. Delinquent meaning me. Anyway, if you remember on last week's show, I talked about a friend of mine, a Latin guy, who lost his identification card. And then we went through all the crap he had to go through to apply for a new one. Well, guess what? There is an addendum to that story. Now, of course, before he went down to the government immigration offices and such, he searched everywhere, tore his clothes closets apart. He went through his car, his garage, his office, everywhere. So he thought. That's when he threw in the towel and decided it was time to get another one. Anyway, along with checking every place he could think of, he went to the grocery store and the bank, actually two banks that he uses, thinking back on every place he could remember for the last 2 or 3 weeks where he'd pulled that thing out and had to use it. And actually, the prime suspect at the time he was searching was the drive-up bank windows where, you know, you shove your documents in the tube and it ends up in the hands of some unknown person who you soon find out is dumber than you are. Which, if you remember, was a subject I hit on a few shows ago. Anyway, my Latin friend checked the usual suspects, which would be the banks with the drive-up windows, and of course, the teller reported there were no ID documents turned in or left there by mistake. So, no dice. Which is why, after 3 weeks of searching, he went to Plan B, which was go down to immigration, face the mind-numbing bureaucracy, and apply for another one. Anyway, he called me 2 days ago and said, "Johnny, you'll never believe this. I found my national ID card." I said, "Really? Where was it?" He said he went to his usual drive-up bank window with a lot of change in bags, and he wanted to get it converted into bills. And the teller said he had to come in and do that personally because they had to count each and every one of them. So he went into the bank, where there was around 10 people in line, and it was going pretty slow. And after about 15 minutes, he noticed to his left at customer service, a lady had walked up to the window, and he overheard her asking if they'd found her national identity card. She'd lost it, too. And he watched the customer service lady go over to a file cabinet, and she pulled out a shoebox that was literally filled with national ID cards that people had somehow left behind and never bothered to come in and reclaim, or who knows. No matter. The crazy thing was, he said, there were probably from 100 to 200 national ID cards in that box. So my friend stepped out of line, went over to the counter, and inquired himself. And guess what? His card was there. And when she pulled it out and handed it to him, he said, "I don't get it. I asked the lady at the drive-up window if my card was here, and she said no. And that was about 2.5 weeks ago." And the customer service lady shrugged and said, "Well, maybe she didn't hear you right or was just too busy or overlooked it. We have lots and lots of cards in here. Look." My friend said she seemed so happy for him that he'd found it. And he was so relieved he didn't argue a bit. Now, you longtime listeners will know that Latins are very averse to confrontation, which is why you almost never see a Latin person blow up in a long line or get frustrated at a bank teller window, but you will see the occasional gringo go that route. The fact is, when we gringos first get done, we have our days when we blow up. I admit it happened to me years ago, many times. Sooner or later, we calm down because we know it doesn't help anything. It certainly doesn't get things moving any faster. This is Latin America, you know. Anyway, there was another issue looming here. In 15 days or so, his new national ID card will be ready for pickup. And I said, "Are you going to go down and get it?" And he said, "Maybe, if I'm in the area, but there's no rush now." Because he knows the immigration office will keep his spare identity card on hand for, who knows, decades. So the moral of this story? Well, this is Latin America. It's the third world. People are on mañana time. And the details, well, you and I know about details, but Latins, they have to be taught by people like us. Now, this little story demonstrates something else, too. It really does seem Latins are unconcerned about things that should be important. For example, a lot of people don't much care about their national ID cards. I mean, if the bank can collect literally a shoebox full of these things, well, that's a pretty stark example, isn't it? Because you see, down here, that national ID card is needed for so many things. Like, for example, registering at a school, buying or renting a car or a house or an office space, paying with a check or entering a gated community, and on and on. More importantly, drawing money in person out of your own bank account. Now, compare that situation to a gringo like yourself up in Cleveland who's just discovered he can't find his driver's license. Now tell me, how long would it take for the panic to set in? About 20 minutes after you've torn the whole house and your car apart, maybe? Certainly, it would be on your mind a lot, and it would ruin your week, and you probably wouldn't sleep well until you got a replacement. Am I right? And by the way, like I mentioned before in a past show, if you lose your driver's license down here and you get stopped or pulled over, the worst that'll happen is you'll get a $25 or $30 fine. And surprise, surprise, you'll be able to drive off without a license after getting the ticket. You know, if that happened in the States, they'd confiscate your car and you might spend the night in jail. Which reminds me, if you get your driver's license down here in Latin America in whatever country, or you're driving on your U.S. or Canadian or your first world license, whatever, that's no problem at all. In fact, it's a curiosity to the police. They'll look at your foreign driver's license and let you go, even if it's expired. In fact, it could be years beyond the expiration date. How do I know that? Happened to me. And do note, I always recommend you make a nice high-quality scan of your ID documents, your passport, your driver's license, whatever. Print out a copy and always keep them in your secret little pouch where you probably have your passport too or whatever. And of course, always have a tiny flash drive on your person so you can have access to that stuff too if you need it. Because here's another something that'll never happen up in the States. Down here, for example, if you lose your driver's license, you can pull out a copy of your driver's license and the police will accept that with no problem. And it doesn't even have to be notarized or stamped or sealed either. How do I know that? Because I know any number of long-term expats who've done that, including expat Eddie. Though, in this case, it's always better to have a copy notarized by a Latin lawyer, which will set you back a whole $10, probably, or less. Now remember, cops down here only have a 6th or an 8th grade education, so stamps, stickers, and fancy seals and signatures really impress. And if a cop says, well then why don't you have your real license on you, you can say, well, it's been stolen. Give them some excuse, you left it back in your hotel or something. And you know, many a long-term expat use this favorite excuse, it's mine too. Just tell the cops, the U.S. State Department website says we should never carry our original documents, only copies. They say leave them in the hotel safe. And you know what, the cops always seem to buy that one. So tell them the truth or whatever white lie you want to lay on them. Just remember, you've always got that U.S. State Department website fallback position. And it actually does say, carry copies, not the originals. Now, in no way am I recommending you lie to upstanding, honest government officials. Come on, there has to be one or two of them out there. Perhaps I'll meet one someday. As for the other 99% who are lying, thieving puss bags, whether in the first or third world, I believe they should be treated as such, but that's just me. And I mean that in the kindest, most Christian way, of course. Oh, and one last thing about driver's licenses. I actually know a gringo whose driver's license expired must be now 10 or 12 years ago. And since he doesn't have a residency in a Latin country, he'd love to get residency, but he has kind of a dodgy past and could never get a clean police report up in the States. Yet, he continues to drive down here in Latin America and never has any problem. So, how does he do it? Well, he scanned his driver's license, made a copy, went down to one of the local police stations and reported that his license was stolen. The desk cop there filled out a usual police report, and he got a copy of that report. He carries that with him, and if and when he ever gets stopped by a cop or is asked to produce an ID, he produces a scan of his driver's license and the official report from the police that says it was reported stolen. And the usual response he gets from cops and officials? Oh, sorry about that. Hope you get it straightened out. Talk about clever gringos, huh? But I digress, as usual. We were talking about that shoebox full of unclaimed national IDs at that bank branch. And by the way, my Latin friend said they were divided into male and female stacks, and the female stack was only about a third of the height of the male stack. In other words, guys lose or misplace 3 times as many national IDs as the ladies do. Or you could say they're 3 times more careless than the ladies. Still, the big question is, why so many of them collecting in the bank like that? And why isn't the bank notifying people that they've got those IDs? Remember, these are the bank's own customers. I mean, come on, they're all in a box in a cabinet next to the customer service lady. Wouldn't that be the definition of good customer service? Let's see now, how would you go about doing that? Well, you've got the person's ID, so you can go right on the computer, look up their customer data, because they are bank clients, after all. Give them a call and say, hey, We've got your ID. Come on down.
Duh.
Which again goes right straight back to what I've said so many times. Customer service really does not exist down here in the way it does up in the States, which is part of your gringo advantage. But you knew that already, right? That said, let's get to some of the more interesting emails that have been really stacking up. First, we have one from our friend, the amazing Captain Mango himself, who, by the way, made an appearance or two at my last Expat Insider Seminar. Now, what you didn't know about Captain Mango is he is not only the world's foremost expert on mangoes and, secondarily, deadly coconuts, making him a self-proclaimed agri-mango-coca-horticulturalist, he's also quite knowledgeable about genetically modified crops. Apparently, when I spoke about GMOs in Latin America on last week's show, that motivated him to fire off this email. He says, "Johnny, not to be nitpicky, I've got three syllables for you. Glyphosate, the active ingredient in Roundup, the infamous systemic herbicide. Though the more cultured might drop the H and say herbicide, tomato, tomato, no matter. It'll still f*** you up. And of course, it's intended to kill weeds. That said, people must remember BT is an insecticide that kills bugs, not weeds, and specifically kills worms, which technically includes the subclass of politicians, but they seem to be resistant. In fact, the letters BT comes from the bacterium that's used. It's called Bacillus thuringiensis, or BT, which occurs naturally in the gut of caterpillars of various moths and butterflies, as well as on leaf surfaces, aquatic environments, animal feces, insect-rich environments, and flour mills and grain storage facilities. The captain says, during sporulation, many BT strains produce crystal proteins, called endotoxins, that have insecticidal action, which has led to their use as insecticides and more recently to GMO crops using BT genes. Captain Mango says, in my past life, I used to spray BT wettable powder on cauliflower and cabbage. So I guess, Captain, you were pretty much worm-free yourself then, huh? Anyway, the captain continues, so it would be the crystalline proteins that resulted that destroyed the gut of the worm. Then he says, you'd think PETA would get after this cruel and unusual treatment of poor, lowly worms. But alas, worms are not cute, so they have no support group. But aside from that, here's the astonishing part, he says. BT insecticide is approved for certified organic use. Now, the GMO part enables the plant to foster the growth of the BT itself, thus negating the need to apply the bacterium manually like we used to do. And although GMOs are not suitable for certified organic labeling, get this, non-GMO BT-sprayed crops do qualify. So once again, Captain Mango adds some valuable insight to the conversation, which raises a handful of even more serious questions. So what Captain Mango is saying is that you guys buying your certified organic products up north, they could very well have been sprayed with BT insecticide and you wouldn't even know it. They don't have to label that. So now what? What are you supposed to do? Hey, here's an idea. Come down to Latin America, buy from the small farmers at the local produce markets. That could very well be the healthiest thing you could ever do. So then if you are what you eat, well, let's not go there. So bottom line, here's a good place to start. If you value your intestinal flora, don't eat anything with corn or soybean in it. That would be a good start. That means, unfortunately, Latin Americans are in for a very rude awakening. Now, just as gringos up north have bread with practically every meal, Latins have corn tortillas and tamales and tostadas, everything and anything you could do with corn, they're making it down here in Latin America, as the indigenous people have done for millennia. In fact, both the Aztecs and the Mayans worship a corn god, if you can believe that. And if they knew BT corn crops had arrived, I'm sure they'd be turning over in their pyramids. And when you bring the subject up even to the most intelligent and educated Latins, not one in a thousand knows what the hell you're talking about. I mean, let's face it, in the last 5 years, U.S. junk food and processed crap has arrived in a huge way. McDonald's, Kentucky Fried, and even worse, local bad copies of the same. Worse yet, many Latins are now switching from natural fruit juices to Kool-Aid and Tang-like substitutes. It's not about nutrition, it's 100% about the price of food and food products. Like Expat Eddie always says, and remember, he's a big buyer of food products because he's got a chain of restaurants. He says, why do Latins even bother to put food ingredient labels on anything since Latins look at the price, nothing more? And it's really true. Gringos who are paying attention will tell you that they've never seen a Latin read a food label in a grocery store. I guess if you want to be kind, you could say it's because they've only very recently been introduced into the culture. However, there is one very, very positive note in the slowly degrading food systems of Latin America. By degrading, I mean they're adopting all the processed crap that we have up in the States. However, and this is a big plus, they do not have high fructose corn syrup in Latin America. It's not to say that stuff's not down here. You'll find it in all imported products from the States, right? But you can thank Buddha, Krishna, or whoever. They grow sugar down here. It's the climate for it, so they don't have to import high fructose corn syrup. Since sugarcane grows like a weed down here and it's non-GMO, you'll find locally processed products contain nothing but real cane sugar. So that means all associated physical and mental problems are not in the equation down here. Except, of course, in that wealthy 5% of the gringo wannabes who walk into Costco or Walmart and buy imported, packaged U.S. food products, which are loaded with high fructose corn syrup. For example, Famous Amos cookies, even Skippy peanut butter. You know, that comes with added sugar. Not cane sugar either. High fructose corn syrup. So bottom line, gringo wannabes and people that can afford imported products here are highly dosed with that toxic crap and they don't even realize it. After all, if the gringos are using it, it must be good, right? And you know, smart, educated Latins are not catching on to this at all. They want everything gringo, even the bad stuff. And though the internet's right at their fingertips, they don't use it to investigate anything either. For example, just the other day, I was talking to that Latin friend of mine who lost that national ID card. He just bought a brand new TV, and I said, which one'd you get? He said, a 50-inch LG model. And with dozens of models to choose from, I asked him why he picked that one. He said, because his brother has one. I said, did you check out the specs or go online to see what the reviewers say about it? And he gave me a puzzled look, like, what for? My brother has one, he likes it, and the price was right. And you know what? This guy works at a big cell phone company. He should know better. And I know this guy's college educated and he's way above average. So you see, it's the culture down here. You know, you probably would never catch a college-educated, above-average American guy not investigating a big purchase like that. Most of us, practically all of us, will go on Amazon and read the reviews at least. I mean, come on, how tough is that? In fact, when you go on Amazon, it's right in your face. They say, we've got 56 positive reviews. You want to look at the top 10? For Latins, that stuff's just not on the radar. But I digress as usual. On to the next email. This one's from another Johnny. He says, hey, Johnny, I'm planning on visiting 3 or 4 Latin countries this year. I just got back from Mexico City, and I know you don't care for Mexico, but I have friends there, and I'm making plans for a couple more trips there later in the year. My question is, do you have advice for hiring a local guide? There are lots of guide websites, but they are generally too expensive. The fact is, I'm looking for something on the cheap. I'm hoping to go to Colombia in a couple of months, and would like to hit Medellin and Bogota for a couple of days each. My Spanish is weak, so a bit of English in a guide would be great. By the way, Johnny, here's a tip. You might want to check out a website called italki.com. That's italki.com. I have been taking Spanish lessons from that site, and it's been pretty helpful to have a native speaker correcting my pronunciation. Any thoughts you have would be appreciated. A loyal listener, John. Well, John, this is a good time to give all you listeners some general advice on how to find a guide / tutor / translator. You know, I've never heard anybody but myself talk about this method right now. But I, over the years, have developed a kind of a foolproof method to hire a local guide. On the cheap. If you're going to be in a country like Colombia for any length of time, then you could hook up with a guide / translator when you're down there. However, if you try beforehand while you're sitting in Cleveland to hook up with a guide in Colombia, let's say, on the internet, it's going to be expensive. Because then you're talking about gringo prices, and the people on the internet know that, so you're talking maybe 50 to 100, even 200 bucks a day. I know gringos who've paid that. And on top of that, you're going to provide the transportation. Generally, taxis, or you'll rent a car, which is going to cost you at least $50 more on top of that per day. So here's what I recommend. And remember, I've done this before, so it works. I don't do it anymore because my Spanish is pretty good. And I know my way around a lot of Latin big cities and most Latin countries, to some degree anyway. But if your Spanish kind of sucks, this is the perfect way to hook up with a guide. You decide which city or cities you're going to go to. Let's pick Medellin, Colombia. Get on the internet and look up the universities in that town, and there's at least 20 of them. Look for the ones that are private and not public. And why is that? Well, I'll tell you in a second. Then, you go on the main page website for the English department at that private university, fire off an email to the contact person, secretary, or head of the department, it'll be listed on that page in English, saying exactly what you want. You want to hire a university student, English language major, to take you around as a tour guide through the city and put the dates down and say you'd appreciate if they'd put it up on the bulletin board in the English department and pass the word around and give her your contact information and say you're available to Skype with prospective candidates. Mention you'll pay twice or three times the minimum wage per day, whatever, that'll be a negotiable, plus meals and expenses. Then sit back and get ready for the deluge of emails and resumes. Now you should be doing this at least a month before you get down there. And note, you don't really have to give a price quote. You could ask your prospective candidates what they expect to get paid. And believe me, you'll be amazed how cheap you could get them because for one thing, they want to practice English with a real English speaker. That's the main thing because they're from the English department. They're studying English and have almost no one to practice first world conversational English with. Oh, and by the way, the reason I mentioned you should check out private universities, not public ones, is because the public ones are dirt cheap, technically free. And most of the students who go there are from middle and lower middle class families, so they don't have cars and they're taking public transportation and chicken buses into school every day, etc. However, at private universities where the tuition is substantially higher, though ridiculously cheap by our standards, most of those kids have a car in the family. Therefore, you're killing two birds with one stone. You'll get a translator, tutor, local guide with a car. And like I said, if you rent a car yourself, you'll probably pay around $50 a day with insurance and all that stuff. However, if you hire an English-speaking college student with a car, you'll probably most likely pay little more than the cost of a rental car itself. And that person will speak English and be a virtual encyclopedia of the area you're interested in. Now, for me, the preferable way to do this is not by the internet, because you'll be screwing around with emails and interviews and stuff. The best way is to actually show up in that country or city of choice and go to one of those private universities yourself. Walk right into the English department. State your case to the people there, the secretary, whoever you run into first. Put a little notice on the school bulletin board in the English department. Remember, everyone's going to speak English there, at least attempt to. And of course, when you get in that country, buy a cheap throwaway phone right away. It's usually around $15 to $20, so prospective candidates can contact you right away. And an email address would be good too, so you can communicate with them on your smartphone or at a cafe internet. Oh, and by the way, all university kids are on WhatsApp, you know, the latest and greatest ubiquitous social media app. That, by the way, I don't have because I don't have a smartphone and don't want one. I'll tell you that WhatsApp app is all the rage here in Latin America now. Everyone's on it, except me. And I've seen young upper middle class and gringo wannabe Latins kind of belittle their friends who haven't got the app yet. Like in the old days up in the States, if you didn't have a zillion fake friends on Facebook, you were nothing. By the way, with lag time here in Latin America, it's still like that with Facebook. Makes you just want to beat people over the head with their selfie sticks, doesn't it? You know, there's an idea. Why not bring back public floggings with selfie sticks? Then maybe I'd buy one. Anyway, besides Facebook, Twitter, selfie sticks, and the A word, WhatsApp's another thing that's getting on my nerves down here. In fact, it's almost completely taken the place of text messaging because those cost money. And using WhatsApp is virtually free. But like I said, you'll only see that in general use amongst college kids and upscale people with smartphones. The rest of the lower middle class and poor population do not use apps like that. Not yet, anyway. Now, as to that Spanish learning course online called italki.com, John says he's been taking his lessons there. Well, guess what? In maybe the last 6 months, there's been a huge barrage of commercials on Latin TV promoting an internet-based course that's exactly the opposite. It's for Latins who want to learn their English face-to-face with a gringo up north. EnglishLive.com. But as usual down here, they're using macho marketing they could never get away with up in the States. They show hot young American blue-eyed college students, every Latin guy's impossible fantasy, and these are the ladies supposedly you're going to have some FaceTime with if you pay your $99 and sign up for the class. And for Latin ladies who sign up for these internet English courses, they've got young, good-looking Brad Pitt-like guys that they'll supposedly get FaceTime with if they sign up. But alas, it's a gimmick that Latins are getting sucked into left and right. First of all, the ads are totally misleading. But you do get all that FaceTime with beautiful first world people, right? Wrong. You pay $99 for access to the course for 9 months. But get this, in that entire 9 months time, you only get 40 minutes of actual FaceTime with a real person on the net. And you have to do that 40 minutes all at once. You can't split it up. So what about the rest of the 9 months? Well, they've got written materials that you can access. No different than the CD courses like Rosetta Stone. So they're really pulling a fast one based on the TV commercials that, believe me, you see every hour or so. And the bait? Good-looking gringos and gringas that you can talk to face-to-face. What great marketing, huh? It's just amazing what you can get away with down here. So then what about consumer protection and consumer protection laws? Well, basically there ain't none. Except, I have to admit, I've seen lately in some stores and businesses a complaint book or log at the front desk that's issued by the local Latin government. I understand most Latin governments are starting to do this now. So customers can now write their complaints in a book. And the business will actually have a record of those complaints and hopefully try to correct them. But it's an honor system and you know how that goes. One small step, but it is a step in the right direction. Okay, that said, you know I'm always talking about the Gringo Advantage. And occasionally I get emails from people who have boots on the ground down here that give me their own Gringo Advantage stories. And here's one that just came in. It's from Jerry. He's down here permanently in Central America now. And he just happened to be one of my expat insider seminar repeat offenders. Anyway, he writes, Johnny, so here I am in line at the Linea Dorado bus terminal to catch a ride to a faraway city. There are about 6 locals ahead of me, and I noticed I have to go through metal detectors to board the thing. And you have to open your carry-on items to be inspected. So anyway, I'm watching as each one in front of me has their bag inspected, and I'm waiting my turn to be ransacked. Well, I'm guessing you already know how this one ends. Yes, I step through the metal detector and the bag inspector hands me my stuff unmolested without as much as even a pat down. Yes, Johnny, you're right. The Gringo Advantage strikes again. Thanks for that, Jerry. And again, you listeners out there, get some boots on the ground yourself and you'll see what I'm talking about. Okay, we're getting towards the end now and I have to remind you to go to www.thenewexpat.com and check out masterful blogger John Galt. And don't forget to go to YouTube and plug in the Expat Files or Expat Files and see the slideshow that goes along with each episode.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.